Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today I have a great guest. It should be a lot of fun. Her name is Denise Ellis. And so, Denise, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Nancy. I've been looking forward to this.
Great. Now, you call yourself an awakening facilitator, a master result coach, speaker, and author. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go back before that.
Okay.
And you're going to let the listeners learn a little bit more about you as to why you got on that path to begin with. And then I got more questions.
Okay, so cool. You know, I believe that we are tailored and prepared for particular life's paths. And this might not be true for everybody, but I believe this is true for me, that before I came in, that I knew what I was going to do. And I needed certain experiences and certain beliefs and certain challenges, lots of challenges, to overcome to prepare myself for this path that I'm on. And so where did I come from? Well, I was a lonely only child who grew up in Queens, New York in the 60s and 70s. And really, I was quite lost for a number of years, not just as a child, but into my teenagehood and into my early adulthood. I really had, as a child, very, very bad communication skills. I was the kid that everybody picked on. I know a lot of people can resonate with that. I really had no idea, you know, who I was, where I was going. When I was about 16 years old, I found myself in a horrifically abusive relationship and barely escaped with my life, but obviously did, and learned a lot from that. And shortly after that, actually became pregnant at 17, and that was not planned, as you can imagine. Decided to have the baby, the best decision I ever made, because it really helped me to grow up in so many ways. I discovered what love was. I discovered what responsibility was. I discovered the real meaning to freedom. I just started to discover who I was. And it was a turning point, because I thought, what is the one thing that I want to give to my child? And that answer was self-esteem, and I didn't have it. So I had a big problem there. And I realized that in order to give my child self-esteem, that I had to figure out for myself. And I also realized that all the problems that I had had up to that point were a result of low self-esteem. So I sat down on this path at 17 years old. Really, the path started very knowingly at 12, because that's when I started reading everything I could get my hands on as far as spirituality and metaphysics and psychology and parapsychology and you name it. I really was self-educating for many, many years. But at the age of 17 is when I decided really that I was going to have to work on myself, and did everything that I could over the course of many, many years to raise my own self-esteem. And it was quite a project, but it was worth every single minute. And as a result, I realized that I had a path and a calling for helping other people do the same, but not just in helping them find their self-esteem, but helping them in find who they really are. And I think that beyond anything, or if I could encapsulate it, that what I do is I really help people, create the space for people to discover who they really are. Because once we discover who we really are, then everything else takes care of itself, and it's an easy road. But until we know who we really are, then we have challenges and doubts and all sorts of obstacles that ultimately are designed to lead us to waking up and remembering who we really are. And from that place, then we get to create the lives that we truly want and desire, that we came here to live. So that's the overview of my early years.
But then really, it's a pretty good experience, because there are a lot of people out there, Denise, that's going through many, many things. And
yes.
Usually what happens is that they will ask somebody who really hasn't been there yet,
mm-hmm.
or if they have been there, they forgot. And so they'll get a lot of answers.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the answers are more confusing than actually helpful. But
mm-hmm.
because the people are searching, it's like, well, okay, we'll do this and we'll do that. And a lot of times it doesn't quite turn out the way the person would like it to turn out, or they expect it to. And all of a sudden they get angry, they get hurt, they feel like they've been cheated, and they do all kinds of horrendous things to themselves and their
mm-hmm.
self-esteem.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of people are kind of doing that now. You know,
yeah.
with the way the economy is and everything, and, you know, they're beating themselves up on a constant basis. So, you know, going through what you went through, I was actually much better. I was constantly protected by my angels, so all I got to do was see lots of stuff, know a lot of stuff, and
yeah.
just grow like that, which is really a good thing.
Yeah.
But there are many people who are having a very tough time. So, Denise, can you kind of give them some kind of insight on maybe what might help them to kind of get into that mindset change that most people need to get into, like, now?
Yes, you're totally right. There's a lot that's going on in this world, and a lot is happening to people individually and to us collectively as a global society. And people are finding themselves in situations that are scary and frightening, and they're beating themselves up and not feeling so good. And the thing that I want to say that probably is the most optimistic and what I truly believe to be true is that even in these worst moments, that they are designed to help us to wake up and become who we truly are. So it's not like you're doing it wrong. No one's doing it wrong. I think that understanding that whatever's happening is perfectly designed to help you wake up is huge right there. I think a lot of times people feel like, oh, I made the wrong choice, I made the wrong mistake, or, you know, whatever the case may be, and that's why they beat themselves up. If we know that we've done the best that we can, often, you know, we're a lot easier on ourselves. So the first thing that I'd like to say is that wherever you are and whatever you're experiencing is absolutely perfect. And the world now is reorganizing itself, and it's reorganizing itself through each one of us. And this often means that we go through a time of chaos and crisis, and that's what we're experiencing now. But through that chaos and crisis is where we get to make new choices. So if everything's going perfectly and you know, a person's life is just all idyllic and there's nothing wrong, there's no reason to make change. But when we're in crisis and chaos, as so many people are now on this planet, then we get to say, wait, something's not working, something's broken, and I need to make changes. And this is the opportunity. This is the Japanese symbol for crisis is danger, and means danger and opportunity. And truly, this is the opportunity. And when we take the responsibility back, and this would probably be the second thing that I would say, don't blame anyone. Don't blame the world, because as long as we blame someone, we're disempowered. So, you know, when I was in this abusive relationship, I, you know, blamed my boyfriend, and I blamed this person, I blamed my parents, and, you know, I did a lot of blaming. And as long as I was blaming, I was stuck. But as soon as I took responsibility for myself and my choices, then suddenly I was empowered, and then I could make different choices. So the second thing that I would say is take responsibility for everything in your life. Now, the key is not to blame yourself. And this is a very, very important discernment, that you can take responsibility without self-blame. They're totally different energies. Taking responsibility, self-responsibility, is empowering, because that means that you have control, that you have the power to change your life. Whereas self-blame, which would be the same thing as, you know, beating yourself up, the self-blame is disempowering and makes you feel weak, like you can't do anything. And so those are the two things that I would say is, like, remember that this is an opportunity before you. And to take responsibility means that you have the choice to change your life. And this is truly how we change the world. I believe that every single person here now has come here with the mission of changing the world. And how do we change the world? Well, we wake up and remember who we really are, and we move into love. And truly through this path of awakening and love, Our world is absolutely destined to be one of harmony and one of beauty and one of paradise. We truly will experience paradise here on Earth, and I know in my heart this to be true, and it's happening now, despite how it might seem contrary.
Yeah, it does. Because, see, most people really have, in my opinion, forgotten what the word love is, how to do it, and how to share it. Yeah. And you can look around and see it, like, all the time, and it's like, you know, you want to stop and ask them, what happened to you to make you forget how to love? Yeah. And I've done that to people sometimes, just to kind of throw them off. And they look at me kind of funny, like, well, what do you mean? You know, I love me. It's like, really? Tell me why you love you, or how you love you, or, you know, anything like that. And then people tend to stumble a little bit, because I think people want to love themselves so that they can actually love others, but I don't quite know if they really know that they do yet or not. And so when I talk with people, I always tell them this is truly an inside job. Yeah. There's nothing on the outside that's going to make it all work. It has to come from within, and that starts with love of one's self.
Right.
And a lot of people have a hard time with that, you know, but, you know, they're getting there. They're getting there.
Yeah.
So what does an awakening facilitator do?
Well, Well, it's not just awakening, it's peacefully, because we can be awakened the easy way or the hard way. You know, it's like if we don't wake up, you know, I think of, you know, I have teenage boys, and they don't like getting up early for school in the morning. And, you know, I can go in there with a big blowhorn and scream, and, you know, that wouldn't be a very peaceful awakening. Or I could go in there, and I can, you know, gently tell them, you know what, it's time to get up, Travis, it's time to get up, Clay, and then they can gradually wake up. So awakening, what I do, people, I'm a coach and facilitator, and I have a coaching school and a whole bunch of other things. And so what I do is I help people wake up by remembering who they really are. I help people wake up by helping them to stop the negative self-talk. I help them wake up by, you know, discovering what this self-love really is. Because you're absolutely right, Nancy, that it is an inside job, and that as long as, you know, as long as we don't love ourselves, we're stuck. And the key really is to loving ourselves. And once we love ourselves, then everything starts taking care of itself. But you're absolutely right. It is a hard, hard thing to do or to understand even.
What if we started when the children were really young, helping them to really learn how to like themselves, love themselves, and give them all the encouragement, even if they're maybe not doing it exactly the way that we as parents or whoever may like them to, but give them all the encouragement that they could possibly get.
Right.
Would that make a big difference?
Right. It starts there. You know, I have a little 10-month-old grandson, and he is just surrounded by love. I know for a fact that there will never be any criticism around him. And from this place, he gets to grow and bloom. My own children, I have, you know, brought them up in an environment of complete love, and you know, they love themselves, and they care about themselves. So yes, it does start in childhood. But what does that help? How does that help the rest of us? Because many of us have been brought up to, you know, to not love ourselves. You know, I know, you know, when I was a kid, we were taught, like, oh, you need to put others first always. And if you think of yourself first, then you're selfish. And so many of us, especially females on this planet, have been brought up to believe that. And so we need to shift those beliefs. You know, I think the children that are coming in now are getting it. But, you know, why not create a space for everybody to wake up and for everyone to love themselves? I think what stops people from loving themselves is that we've been so programmed with what I call the unworthiness program, and that is that from the time we go to school, and sometimes even before that, but generally when we start school, we learn about worthiness, and immediately, first day of school, we learn that there's right and wrong, there's failure and success, there's good and bad, there's worthy and unworthy, deserving and undeserving. And so now, you know, suddenly we're not good enough. Suddenly we have to prove ourselves. And not only schools teach us that, but religions teach us that, and society, governments, you know, it's taught all over the place that you're either worthy or not worthy, or some degree of one or the other, which still is, you know, this unworthiness scale. And as long as we have to prove our worth, as long as, you know, we are not good enough, if, and the if can be just a majority of many, many things. If we're, you know, we follow the rules, if we, you know, do good in school, if we, you know, have enough money, the right car, the right house, it just goes on and on and on, and they're impossible. Because once we reach a certain set, a certain standard, like, okay, this makes me worthy, then suddenly there's a whole new set of rules that I need to meet to make me worthy. And so the key is to really to just drop this concept of having to prove yourself worthy. And the interesting thing, Nancy, is that it's impossible to prove ourselves worthy. It's absolutely impossible. We are intrinsically worthy. You cannot prove something that's intrinsic as such. And so as long as, you know, we play this game of I have to prove I'm worthy, what we're really saying is I don't believe that I am worthy. And as long as we don't believe we're worthy, then we really can't support ourselves in these self-loving and self-accepting ways that you and I are speaking about now.
I think a lot of times, you know, people really have the best intentions with who they think they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I really believe that they do, but then they allow themselves to get all caught up in the drama of whatever's been going on in their life at the moment. And as soon as they start to allow that drama to come in, it's much easier to stay caught up in drama than it is to take the responsibility to get out of it.
Yeah.
And so when people are caught up in the drama, you know, sometimes they are quite successful at letting it go, and other times they need a little coaching, and then some people need a lot of coaching to let go. Why do you think people want to hold on to some of their past hurts, pains, angers, or guilt so much that they're afraid to move forward?
We identify with them. We, you know, something happens, you know, we're rejected by a lover, and, you know, we are so hurt that we hold on to the anger and the resentment because it protects us from being hurt again, or at least we think it does. So our identity gets so connected to the past in order to protect ourselves from the present and the future that we lose the present and the future. It also, when we hold on to, you know, past hurts or even current dramas, it diverts our energy. And we are, you know, there have been very wise beings on this planet, where Marianne Williamson is one of them, who have said that we are not afraid of, you know, our failure, but we're afraid of our success. We're afraid of how great we can be, because that's really scary to be that great and that powerful. And so when we focus on drama, when we focus on, you know, disempowering things, then we don't have to worry about how powerful we are, because it disempowers us. We've never been taught, none of us have been taught how to embrace our power. I mean, I don't remember a class in school that was entitled Embrace Your Power 101. It doesn't exist. We're taught not to be powerful. And, you know, the way our systems have been set up, our governments and many, many systems, they're set up so that, you know, we follow along like lambs rather than discover our powerful selves. So, you know, when things come along in our lives that we can focus on so we don't have to embrace our power, it's almost like an automatic program that happens. So we give our power away to them.
Especially women do that because of the way that most of them have been raised. What can you tell the women, something that maybe you can give them to help them not give up their power?
Good question. It never works. It never works, you know, and having been a woman who gave up her power to more than one man, I hate to admit, I can honestly say it never works. You know, when I coach women, and I've coached many, many women over the years, all countries around the world, all ages, and, you know, any woman, which is most women one time or another who have given up power to a man, has discovered in the end that it doesn't work. And how could it work? It couldn't possibly work. Because when we give away our power, what we're doing is we're giving away our sense of self. And if we don't show up in a relationship with a sense of self, then we're not showing up at all. And this is not in just in relation to relationships with men, but for women who have relationships with other women, for any woman that you know goes to work and has a relationship with the people at work, for any woman who has relationships with relatives or friends, it's the same thing. That as long as you give away your power, you're giving away yourself, and you're not really showing up for that relationship. And it never works. There and you know the universe is self-correcting, because when we do something that's out of alignment with our highest good, or out of alignment with love truly, and this is self-love as well, that it causes us pain. So when we find ourselves in a relationship and we're giving away our power, eventually there will be pain, I guarantee it, and the pain will keep increasing until it becomes intolerable, whatever that means for a particular person. And when it reaches a certain threshold of being too painful, then we make a change. And maybe that means taking our power back. Maybe that means leaving the relationship. It can mean many things to many people. But that pain will keep escalating until we're forced to make a choice, and that choice will have to be for ourselves. And so my advice would be, don't let it get that to that point. Instead of finding yourself in a disempowering relationship where you've disempowered yourself, because that's the only kind of disempowering relationship, and find yourself in a lot of pain that you have to change first. Take your power back. Make a choice that all your relationships, you show up as powerful. And this doesn't mean that you're overpowering. This means that you're clear about who you are, what you want, what you're willing to do and not do, and that you're not willing to sacrifice yourself. Now, this doesn't mean compromise. Certainly in relationships, we sometimes have to find a happy middle ground. But if it makes you feel like you've lost something or sacrificed yourself, then it's not worth it. That truly, that middle ground should be a win-win for everyone. And if you feel that you're constantly giving, or if you feel that you don't have any power, it's time to take a step back and take your power back, because you're the only one who could do it. There's no one to blame. You know, and this is the responsibility piece that we were talking about a few minutes ago, Nancy, that as long as we believe that someone else is responsible for our happiness or unhappiness, then we're disempowered.
Mm-hmm. It's real important that people understand that.
Yes.
Because, again, most people want to blame somebody else to make it easier on themselves. A lot of people are very afraid to try to move forward because, well, if I move forward, that means I have to take responsibility at this point, and I don't know if I can do that. And then they do that logic thing to themselves, like, well, what about the money? What about the kids? What about this? What about
mm-hmm.
that? They never once ask, what about me?
Right.
And that what about me is the most important choice and decision because, you know, I talk to a lot of people just like you do, and I try to tell them that just because there's kids, just because you may think you're going to end up broke, if you're living unhappy and you're not trying to change that, you'll end up sick because
mm-hmm.
that's what our bodies do to try to wake us up.
Yes.
And, you know, and I go on and I explain to them that, you know, whatever is going on in your energy field is going to be picked up by the children. And if you think that you can pretend that everything is okay, think again, because
right.
it doesn't work like that.
Right.
You know, and a lot of people don't want to hear that, but it happens to be the truth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I worked at a crisis center for about 8 years, and we were one of the things that we dealt with there was domestic violence. And it was interesting because that women who are in abusive relationships, the number one reason that they give for staying is the children. And the number one reason that they give for finally getting out is the children.
Mm-hmm.
And that just exemplifies what you're saying, because at some point you realize that it's not healthy for your children to stay in an abusive relationship. And we're not even talking about necessarily a physically abusive relationship. But for children to experience their mother as being disempowered in any way is very unhealthy for them. And it's
mm-hmm.
much healthier for children to see that they're to learn that, you know what, I need to take care of myself, that it's not okay to compromise myself. And you're right, it goes absolutely out in the energetic field and affects them.
You know, plus things keep repeating. So if a
yeah.
child sees what's gone on in their life, they're going to do one of two things. They're either going to turn out to be just like that relationship that they really don't like to see when they're growing up, or they're going to be hardened so that they're afraid to have a relationship because they don't want it to turn out like they grew up
right.
with. You know, and those things need to at least be addressed early so that
exactly.
the children do not have to go through that. Now, you have written a few books,
yes.
and the last one, I believe, was The Infinite Power of You.
That was actually the first one, was
Your
The
first
Infinite
one?
Power of You. Yeah. I had to think about that for a second.
Well, let's talk about each one of them, okay?
Sure.
Because, you know, I think it's important. Well, before we do that, give out your website so
yes.
people can find you.
Absolutely. Thank you. So my website's just my name. It's nanice.com, N-A-N-I-C-E.com. Again, N-A-N-I-C-E.com.
Okay. So let's talk about the first one.
Yes.
When you wrote that, The Infinite Power of You, and it says
yes.
the 22 secrets contained in this book will guide you to reclaim and express the greatest, most powerful you. What prompted you to write that?
So I'll tell you the little cutesy part of it, and then the deeper part. And so it was many years ago, and I on my website I decided that I would have a little quiz that people could take to see how power, if they were really owning their power. And I developed these questions and and automatic responses and all of that. And as I finished doing that, I realized that each of the questions was actually something that I could just write about. And I wasn't planning to write a book. And so I sat down and I took one question at a time, and it really ended up to be 22 at the end. And ended up writing a chapter for each one. And lo and behold, it became a book. So that's the cutesy way of how it actually came about. The universe kind of tricked me, which I love. The deeper, I mean, this is the stories in the book, they are really stories about how we take our power back. And each chapter is very carefully prepared to help the reader look at a different area or issue in their life and to understand, you know, what power really looks like in that way and what it means to be empowered and to really be at choice and to really be conscious in their lives and in the world. And I've had many people that usually when they get the book, they read through the book real fast because it's an easy read. And then they go back and they study one chapter a week. And I've gotten many, many reports for years of just how much this book has changed their lives. And it's very exciting to me.
That's really good because, again, some people need a guide. You know, they need to kind of have some form of a guide because it makes it much easier for them to, you know, learn what they need to do and take back their control. You know, so that's very important. Then your next book was called Even Gandhi Got Hungry and Buddha Got Mad, which I thought was a hysterical title, okay?
Thank you.
Why don't you explain that one because it's cute.
Yes, thank you. So Even Gandhi Got Hungry and Buddha Got Mad. So the idea came from that, you know, as spiritual seekers, that we've been, you know, brought up to believe that spirituality looks a certain way and sounds a certain way and tastes a certain way. And the book started out as this permission to find spirituality for yourself, to find God for yourself, to find, you know, who you are for yourself and to really take that power back. Again, it's a book of empowerment. And the book is also about understanding that we create our lives through the stories that we tell. And that we are as happy or as sad as the stories that we tell ourselves from one day to the next. And the book's designed as a workbook, so each chapter is about understanding how you are the creator of your life, and that simply by changing thoughts and beliefs, you get to change your life. And there's questions at the end of most chapters that actually help the reader figure out what stories that they are telling themselves and how to change those stories, and also to understand how maybe some, you know, not so good things that happened in the past were really good things in disguise. And so to shift a belief about whether this was, you know, to shift the belief that this was once a bad thing into, wow, this was really a great thing that happened to me, releasing the past and being able to grow from it. It's one of my favorites. It's a really, really great book.
Release in the past. I do. I have people that I talk to write a letter to themselves so they can release the past. Because without releasing the past and going forward, it appears that you just keep bringing the same old back over and over again.
You keep thinking the same thoughts. You keep getting the same life.
and the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, exactly the same way, and expecting a different outcome.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand that because it's like they go, well, but I've changed. And it's like, okay, well, what have you changed? You know, kind of tell me, fill me in since I talked to you last.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. And a lot of the people do end up changing. But then there's the ones that create that same old, who keep wanting to talk, and you try to help them. And I'm like you, I don't just leave anybody hanging because that's not the way to do with people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the same time, there's a point that you got to have them wake themselves up so they can follow through and do what they need to do.
Yes.
Now, another
that's
book
what
that
the pain, that's what the pain is for. You know, people think, oh, pain is such a bad thing and God's punishing me. But pain is such a gift because pain makes you wake up. You know, I mean, pain, you know, a physical example of that is during the summer I was cutting some vegetables and I ended up slicing my finger. And the only reason I knew it is because I felt pain. Otherwise, I would have sliced my whole thumb off. And so I was like, thank goodness I had pain. It saved my finger. And pain is the same thing in our physical lives, that when we have pain in our lives, it's a wake-up call that something's not right, that if we didn't have emotional pain, we would keep doing the same thing. And so people that, you know, are on these repetitive cycles, what happens is the emotional pain keeps increasing and keeps increasing and keeps increasing until finally it's unbearable anymore. And that's what wakes them up. That's what wakes them up. So pain in this regard is a gift. And it's also avoidable because when we are conscious and empowered and we make choices that support ourselves, that we don't have pain, instead we have pleasure. So it's like this is how the universe is again, self-correcting, that it will cause pain when we're going in the wrong direction and create pleasure when we're going in the right direction. And not just as a temporary basis, but overall as a deep experience in our lives. And this is how we know we're on track, so to speak.
Which, again, is real important. Now, the other one you have is called 30-Day Gratitude Journal, and I believe it's very important to give back gratitude, no matter what the circumstances. But people don't often look at it like that. So maybe explain why the 30-Day Gratitude Journal would be helpful to most people.
Right. So the 30-day gratitude, the 30-day gratitude journal is an opportunity to really think about what you're grateful for every day for 30 days. So, and the reason that I made it 30 days is because it's doable. You know, if it was a year or more, people are like, oh, that's too much. But 30 days, people can make the commitment to 30 days. And what happens in that 30-day period is that every day you sit down and you think about, what is it that I'm grateful for today? And the list keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the next day, what am I grateful for today? And by the end of 30 days, you have a full little book contained of everything that you're grateful for. And gratitude, we know, is one of the highest vibrations that we can experience and generate for ourselves. And so what happens is when you experience this gratitude every day for 30 days, you've created such a momentum and you've raised your vibration to such that you have even more things to be grateful for.
Well, it's a scientific fact, and I don't think most people know this, that it takes anywhere from 21 to 27 days to create a habit. Okay? And if you do something every day for the same thing, every day for the 21 to 27 days, by that time you have your habit down, and that's what mm-hmm. it's going to be. So people can think of it like that because, you know, if it's a habit, it's going to continue to happen after it's 30 days, after a year. You know, it's going to keep going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important that people understand that to get into a habit, it does not happen overnight. I mean, some habits. Good habits don't happen overnight.
The good habits don't happen overnight.
You know, so they have to be a little careful with those habits, but it does, you know, it's a scientific fact that that's what they learned when they were doing a study of, you know, many, many people, that it took them 21 to 27 days to come up with their habit. And then once they established that habit, it actually took a lot longer to break it than it did to gain it. So that was pretty interesting in the way they did it, because people don't want to give up habits in general.
That's right.
You know, so then the next one you wrote is called I Am. Why would you write one like that says I Am?
Oh, my goodness. I didn't write it. It wrote through me. And
okay.
What I mean by that, it was an experience that I had almost 2 years ago, and I, you know, my whole life, and so many people can identify that, I would ask this question myself, who am I? And you know, depending on where I was in my life, it could have been, you know, I'm a mother, or I'm a teacher, or I'm this, I'm that, or, you know, and this one day that I asked myself, who am I? I suddenly got a whole different, not just answer, but experience. And it was actually evening, and I was lying in bed, and I was listening to beautiful song on my headphones, and I was watching these pictures on my computer, and they were amazing pictures, and they were so, so beautiful. And I just watched one picture after the other go by, and I'm thinking, who am I? And I just started playing a game, and the game I was playing, and anybody can do this, is every picture that would show up, I would say, I am that. And the next picture would show up and ask that. And it was just kind of like a meditation almost, I am that. And it started going on. And at some point, after several minutes, I really started to feel like, oh, I am that. And some of the pictures, I knew exactly what it felt like to be that. And sometimes these pictures were of people, different things in the world. You know, the pictures were of virtually almost anything. And it happened. And when I say it happened, something inside me shifted, and I really was experiencing myself as everything that I was seeing, and not just on the pictures that I was seeing, but everything that I was seeing in my surroundings and everything that I could think about. And it went even deeper. Once I started to really see and get that I am everything, I started to realize that I wasn't just, you know, the beautiful flower, but I was, you know, the ragged weed, that I wasn't just, you know, the most saintly person on the planet, but I was also, you know, the most despised. And this book, the I Am book, actually chronicled my experience over the course of about 2.5 to 3 days. And I was able to journal about it as it was happening. I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. It literally moved through me. And I was crying all the time because it was so beautiful, such a beautiful experience. And so that when it finally, I didn't know I was writing a book at first. And ultimately, you know, I realized, oh, this is a book, and made it into a book. And the vibration, when somebody reads it, and by the way, it is available free on my website. I can give that information as well as a free download. The vibration of the book when it was finally done was so high. And one of the interesting things, Nancy, is that when I went back to edit it, it really only needed some grammatical errors, you know, periods, commas, whatever. The original words and text as it came through was virtually perfect and needed no changing, which is pretty extraordinary to write a book. And
yeah.
It would change my life. The book changed my life.
Which again is pretty important because sometimes it helps to change something. Now, the next one you wrote was called Lip Print.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because there's a lot of lip service that goes on out there.
So Lip Print, and I'll tell you where I got its name from. The name actually came after the book was written. So the theory behind lip prints is that, you know, everybody's walking around and saying, you know, what's my purpose? How can I make the world a better place? And the book, which is a tiny, small little book that will change your life and help you change the world, is really just about that we don't have to remember that we have some grand, great purpose, that every day we have the ability to share our purpose. And, you know, this is the thing, that when we look at purpose, any purpose, it's always about giving. Purpose, your divine purpose is about giving. What do you give? How do you give it? And when we really look deeper at purpose, that we realize the thing that we're giving is love. And so if you want to know what your purpose is to give and share love in some special and unique way, which is up to you. And so the book says you don't have to wait to figure out what that is, that you can start doing that today. And you start doing that today by simply becoming aware of the people in your environment. And simple acts of kindness, holding the door open for someone, smiling at someone, asking how someone's day is, maybe buying coffee for the person behind you at Starbucks. You know, there's a million different things that you can do. And the book is about that, how we can make a difference simply by simple acts of kindness. And because what happens is when I do something nice for someone, it changes them. They feel good, and then they become more generous, and they pass it on. You know, it's kind of like pay it forward concept. And so the book is really the empowerment to be the change that you want to see in the world right now. And it doesn't cost anything. It's just an intention.
It's really funny because when you said, you know, smile at somebody, I walk around smiling a lot.
Mm.
And I don't know why. I just think it's kind of fun to smile because
yeah.
You get some really strange results. You know, you'll smile at one person and, you know, their normal reflex is to smile back. Okay?
Yeah.
Then you'll smile at another person and they'll look at you like, well, what's the matter with you? What are you smiling about? Which only makes me smile more because it just hits me kind of funny. But I think people, again, especially today, have a very hard time smiling, whether, you know, they're smiling just to be smiling or if it's a forced smile. But it's very hard for people to smile. And when people smile, I don't think they realize that it creates a lot of great hormones going through your body that actually makes your body much happier.
Yes.
And so I walk around like the cat that swallows the canary, and everybody's going, what's she smiling about?
You and me both.
Gives them something to think about, you know, which
exactly.
is good, because if people are thinking, that means that their brain is doing a little bit of work.
Yeah.
So that's very important. And then you wrote another one called What If? And
yes.
That question happens a lot to people. What if I had done this, or what if I had done that? So why was this one written?
It's a meditation photograph book. So the what if, suddenly I had a whole bunch of what if questions come to me, and I thought, and I started dotting them down, and I thought, oh, this would be really cool to put together with some photos. And I've traveled quite a bit and have a vast selection of photos, so I just started matching photos up with questions and sometimes finding photos that generated their own questions and put it together. And so it's a colorful photo meditation book. It's really, really cool. And I put books very quickly together. I should mention that I have a publishing company that started as a result of the Infinite Power Review. So it's very easy for me to, you know, take a book from concept to actual production and creation. So
it's good.
Yes.
Now you also work with companies.
Mm-hmm.
So what would possess a company to want to say, let's just call you in? How do they let you know that they think they need some help? What do they say to you?
Well, I think that, and I'm going to paraphrase, but there's a sense of disharmony that, you know, it's kind of like pushing people uphill rather than people, you know, generating their own energy, or there's conflict, or, you know, of course, you know, a lot of companies, it really comes down to the bottom line, where their bottom line just isn't what they want it to be, and they have an awareness that it's really not about the product, but rather the people and relationships. That when it comes down to it, that the success of any business is about relationships, and those are relationships that we have with our clients and our customers, and the relationships that employees and management have with each other. And so usually when a company calls me in, it's because they realize that there's a problem in relating or relationships and communication, and really, you know, maybe leadership as well. So I do a lot of leadership programs where I really redefine leadership, and I empower leaders to find their own voice and to think for themselves and to create the space and energy to really create more productivity in the workplace and what that means to truly succeed, and not just on the outside but on the inside too.
I think a lot of corporations need help this day with acting like they like their people and really loving their people, because it's like for some reason even corporations don't care so much about what happens to their people these days like they used to many years ago, and that's kind of sad.
Yes, it is.
Do you go out and do like say like personal development classes? In other words, you know, say there's a group of people who may want to have a class. Do you
mm-hmm.
do that?
Absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
Do you have any of those classes scheduled in the very near future?
Some private. I do a lot of private ones, but if I also travel to different states. So if any of the listeners are out there and they'd like to get a group together and have me come and do a workshop, I'm definitely available to schedule something like that. And that, I do a lot of those. Yes.
Again, because I think that's real important that people understand that, you know, they can get that.
Absolutely.
You also do you have your own radio show?
Yes, two actually, and one is Chai with Nanise on LA Talk Radio, and I've been doing that for about 2 years, and it went by very, very fast. I don't know how that happened, and that's really what that is. It's an intimate conversation that listeners get to eavesdrop on, and all sorts of topics from spirituality to empowerment to women's issues to really understanding what's going on in the world in ways that, you know, the news doesn't talk about. I've had some amazing guests on, John Perkins and Byron Katie and many others. And it's a really, really fun show to do. And the other show is actually on BBS Radio, and that's Goddardy. It's a new show, and Goddardy is a response to all those people who are looking for God but haven't found God in the traditional ways. And Goddardy is created and designed for listeners to really get back in touch with themselves and find God with inside rather than, you know, outside, because we know that what we're looking for is always inside. Like you said earlier, you know, it's an inside job, and that's where the divine is.
So if they wanted to turn on to your LA Talk Radio show, what day and what time is that?
Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific time on Channel 2.
Okay. And if they want to turn on to the BBS one?
Yeah, it's twice, and I try to say it's every Monday. And Goddardy, which, by the way, Goddardy stands for God plus energy, Goddardy. That's on Tuesdays every other week, twice a month. And I believe it's Channel 1, but if they just go on there and look for Goddardy or look for Nanise Ellis, I'm sure they can find it.
Do you think
all the shows are also? I'm sorry, Nancy. I have all the shows archived on my website as well. So if they go to nanise.com and they click on article shows and more, all my shows are archived there. So, and this show will be archived there as well. So
okay,
they can get them there. Yeah,
that's good. Do you think it's real important for people to dream, have dreams?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think we're dreaming anyway. You know, this is a dream, and we're dreaming. And so it's like, if you want to know what you're dreaming, look around. And if you don't like what you're dreaming, dream something else. And so I realized that the way that you meant that question is, you know, what dream of something that you want in your life. And the reason that I started where I started is that to realize that we are dreaming. This is what we're dreaming, and that we get to dream something better. And so absolutely, what is it that you really want? Anything is possible. Anything is possible. But you have to dream it first. That nothing happened without a dream. So the greatest invention and the greatest art first started out as a dream somewhere and got channeled through to reality. So yes, dream and dream bigger and dream bigger than that, and it's all possible. And all you have to do is choose it and say yes to it. And that brings me back to another book that you probably don't know about. It's called Zest Point, and it's about the power of choice. And, you know, relating to dreams, you've got to choose your dream to make it happen, and that's part of the manifestation process. So it's like the way that we manifest our dreams is first to, you know, to think it, like, you know, that would be nice to have. And then we start, you know, believing it and believing, like, I believe I can have that. And then it turns into a sense of knowing. I know I could have that. And at some point, that's still not enough for manifestation to really manifest. It has to turn into, I choose that. And in the choosing, all sorts of divine magic begins to happen in the universe, and the universe conspires to make it happen. And then all you have to do is take the action that you're guided to do, or maybe it just comes to you. But nothing happens before that choice happens. So whatever you dream, choose it. Choose it, and that activates your dream into reality.
Is there, in your opinion, any dream that's too high for somebody that they can't achieve?
No, impossible. Impossible. Yeah. There's no dream too high. If you can dream it, you know, and I also think that we have a dream, it's the divine speaking to us. Like, it's, you know, it's like we have a dream and, like, we pray, oh, please, you know, give me my dream. But really, I think it's the other way around. I think that when we have a dream, it's God or whatever you call God whispering in our ear saying, here, create this, do this.
See, and I agree. People ask me that all the time. Is there a dream that's too big? And it's like, no, I don't think so. You know, if you can dream it, you can have it.
Yeah.
You just have to go for it to get it. Because people want to dream, and then they want somebody to give it to them. And that doesn't work, folks.
You know, that's right.
You got to do your work. It's very important to do your work. Do you do, like, families, like group, like, you know, mm-hmm. like group, but as a family?
Yeah, absolutely. I do a lot of couples coaching and families, too. And I think we're reaching a time where we really are striving for harmony in relationships and in family. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about learning how to create that harmony within oneself so that we can have harmony in the family and in relationships. So, yes, I do that as well.
I usually ask my guests this question I'm going to ask you, and you don't have to answer it if you don't want to. But I have a problem with the ADD, ADHD label that they are given to mm-hmm. most children today.
Yes.
And then passing out the prescription drugs like it's candy.
Yes.
Do you think that, first of all, that the labeling is being done correctly?
I don't believe in labels at all.
Good.
Yes.
Do you think that these children that actually they're experimenting right now with 2 and 3 year olds with Ritalin to see what it does to their brain?
Mm.
Yeah. Do you think that's important to, not at 2 and 3, but say at age 5, start recommending that children should start to be on something?
Never. I don't think we should put children on anything. I think that we don't understand our children. I mean, all these children have ADD, ADHD. There's something wrong with that. I think that there's been a lot of overdiagnosis, first of all, that, you know, teachers and parents don't know how to handle an active child. So there's something wrong. Let's medicate them to make my life easier. When, in fact, I think what we're really seeing is evolution. I think we're seeing these amazing children come in with an incredible amount of brilliance that we don't yet understand. And my children, you know, my oldest son, for example, you know, they wanted to diagnose him like that. I said, no way. And he's brilliant. He's a brilliant man. Was he a challenging child? Yes, he was a challenging child, but he was also just being himself, and I created that space for him to discover himself. I don't believe in diagnosis, and I definitely don't believe in giving medication to children, unless, of course, there's, you know, a severe problem where that life and death, that child needs some medicine. But when we're talking about, you know, ADHD, I think that it's really a lack of understanding on society's part.
I agree with you. I think these children are coming in much more ahead of the game than we ever thought we were or we could. And I really don't believe parents know how to handle that. You know, plus I realize that the parents today are under a lot of stress trying to put food on the table and a house for people to live in with the way the economy is. But I think they're taking out a lot of their frustration with the children, because the children are only going to pick up the parents' frustration, which is going to make them even more hyperactive because they're feeling it. And they may not even know why they're feeling it, but they're feeling it. And then I think the rest just kind of happens. And I have a really bad taste in my mouth for constantly pushing the ADD, ADHD syndrome out on these children. Because that's what I've been studying, because I actually moved to New Mexico to open a school for children like that.
Wow.
You know, and
that's awesome.
Well, it is. It's hard, but it's a big endeavor, and the idea is to help these children actually be who they are and allow them to be who they are on an individual basis. And it's not just a normal everyday school. It's actually a live-in school and a day school, both for K through high school. And once it's finished, we'll actually accommodate 500 students.
Wow.
Which is a major undertaking. But I got the land donated, so now I just need to raise the funds. But, you know, I've been doing a lot of study, and when I got this one study that they were testing 2- and 3-year-olds on Ritalin, I really went ballistics with that.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe parents know what Ritalin really is doing to these children, as the pharmaceutical companies don't know either. It's just a big total experiment.
Right.
But I think these children are very enlightened coming in here, and I think they're here to teach us a lesson, and that lesson is to how to get back to love.
Right,
and,
exactly.
Okay, and yet we're not quite getting it, so we need to kind of put that in the right perspective and figure out how to get that back so these children actually get to survive, you know.
Yeah.
So give out your website to the people again. We're almost out of time.
Thank you. Wow, that was fast. So it's nanice.com, N-A-N-I-C-E.com. And the I Am book is there for a free download. I have free song downloads and tons and tons of free articles on many of the things that we've spoken about today. All my books are available on the website. And I'd also like to mention that when you go there, take the pledge. It is an amazing, amazing document that you get to read through and pledge that will absolutely empower you and change your life. And you get to print it out and put on your wall as a reminder. So, and then contact me. Sign up for my inspirational daily email called Divine Inspirations. They are channeled several times a week and sent to you. And they have really helped people change their lives and change their days.
If they wanted to email you, where would they email you at?
They can go to the website at nanice.com or just nanice@nanice.com. So nanice@nanice.com. And also I have if anybody's needing prayers or healing, I have a free prayer and healing available, so they can just email me about that as well, too.
Which is pretty cool. I was just going to ask you about the healing, but you already answered that. So it's a good thing. I think people just really kind of need to wake up today and I think it really is going to be hard for a lot of people, but they just have to try. And it all starts, like I said earlier, with an inside job and the dreams that you want to accomplish. So it's very, very important for people. Did I miss anything that I didn't?
That was amazing. You're great.
Well, hi, thank you. The other thing, you know, I read a couple of your books, and they're actually quite interesting. And, you know, so I would actually recommend them to anybody and everybody. You know, because I think everybody needs some kind of a guide. And a lot of the things that you have in your books are really, really important for people to understand and to learn, especially all the love stuff, because people really need to get back to learning how to love themselves.
Absolutely. It's key. It's key.
Very key. The other question now, are you going to be going, like a lot of people have online. Now, you have online classes that you do?
I will be doing some online classes. If anybody's interested in that, just email me. I'll put you on the list, and I'll have some that will be free, so that will be really awesome. And then if anybody's interested, I do a lot of one-on-one coaching, and not just in person, but over the phone to have clients around the world. So if anybody's interested in doing a session and changing their lives, they should contact me as well.
Again, I think all of it's really important, and you know, most of the stuff that we talked about today is really getting people kind of where they need to be. and allowing them to love themselves, because that really is the biggie here.
Yes.
And to me, there's
absolutely
no other way to get past that. So our time is, I think we have like 30 seconds left. So in that 30 seconds, I'd like to thank you for taking time to be on the show. It was very, very good.
Thank you so much, Nancy. I really enjoyed it.
And give out your website one more time and both of your talk shows so people can find you.
Nanice.com, N-A-N-I-C-E, and First Structure LA, on LA Talk Radio, Chai with Nanice, and on BBS Radio, Goddardy, and the information's on my website, so they can find it there as well.
All right. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. I'm really glad that you took the time to, you know, talk.
My pleasure. Thank you, Nancy. You're great.
You're very
thank
welcome.
You.
Thank you. You take care. Have a great day.
I'd like to thank you.
Like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and find that love in yourself. Take care. Bye now.